Welcome to another episode of the Kamunda Nation podcast. I'm your host. My name is Josh Wool, and I'm a developer advocate at Kamunda. It's the hottest topic at the moment, Kamunda Platform 8, and we're going in depth on one of the most popular aspects of that topic, migrating from Kamunda 7. If you've found yourself asking the questions, when should we migrate from Kamunda 7 to Kamunda 8, or how do we go about migrating or preparing ourselves for migration from Kamunda 7 to Kamunda 8, then you are going to want to hear this conversation. This month I talk with Bernd Ruka, co-founder and chief technologist at Kamunda, about the Kamunda 7 to Kamunda 8 migration pathway. When and how does it make sense to do it? Listen up, here we go. This is a really hot topic. Everyone's thinking about it. Everyone who's using Kamunda 7, that is. And even people who are looking at doing new projects on Kamunda are asking the question, should I do C7 or C8 now? But how about we start with people who are already on C7 right now and are thinking about, you know, what am I going to do with my system? When am I going to migrate it? You know, what's involved in it? Those kind of questions. That's the kind of space that I wanted to explore to start with. How does that sound?
Good from my perspective. I think, that matches a lot of the questions we're currently getting also from the existing community and from our enterprise users. So let's say the general recommendation, it's pretty simple. The rule of thumb from our perspective is to migrate as soon as possible. So that's kind of the North Star of saying, okay, migration makes sense. In the long run, you should migrate from Kamunda 7 to Kamunda 8 because that's kind of the product where most of the innovation is going on in the future. At the same time, there are certain reasons why you don't want to migrate exactly right now. And that's also okay. That's one important message we are always sending out. It's totally okay not to migrate now and to wait a little bit for a couple of reasons, which we might also want to go into a bit more.
About why people might not want to migrate now.
Yeah. I mean, let's quickly go into that. One of the top reasons is what we call feature parity. So we have a couple of features in Kamunda 7, which are not yet available in Kamunda 8. We basically, Kamunda 8 was a complete rebuild of the technology behind for a lot of good reasons, but that means we have to redevelop a lot of the features. So it's not just there. And we found a feature set which we wanted to go live with Kamunda 8, where we said, okay, that makes sense to get it to the market, to get feedback, to learn and to iterate on that. And also, this is valuable to a lot of new users. At the same time, if you already run Kamunda 7 and rely on that feature, if it's not there in Kamunda 8, it makes migration much harder. And that, for example, then poses the question, okay, if that feature is not there and I want to migrate, I need to find a workaround. And that's, for example, something where you should probably hold on, talk to us, discuss that, because very often it's simply a matter of time. So, for example, we are missing a couple of BPMN elements. We're catching up on that. In a year from now, that should already look pretty different. And then it doesn't make sense to introduce workarounds to get around that problem to migrate now. Then I would simply wait for another year to migrate, or probably 1.5 years to migrate later on and already have these features available.
Okay. So that's kind of like a technical barrier to migrating. What about the situation where I got my system up and running, it's on Kamunda 7, I'm making money. Now you've gone and changed the whole thing to Kamunda 8 and you want me to rebuild my whole system? Like, I've already invested all this money in developers, tooling, expertise, the thing works. Now we're going to go and rebuild it on top of something else. You know, maybe I've got a long cycle, or maybe it's just making heaps of money and I'm like, man, I just want to keep it running. What about that situation?
I mean, yeah, also fair and totally understandable. I mean, there are multiple viewpoints on that. The one is, if it's running totally fine and you don't have to touch it at all at the moment, that's probably also okay. I mean, we're we're still maintaining Kamunda 7, and that means actively maintaining, so even adding features and actively developing on that for the next 5 years. That's what we guarantee. So that's a long time span in a way. And that means even then we're not dropping everything like, hey, 5 years are gone, we're done. It's like then we're entering the whole maintenance mode, which goes on for, if you ask me, for a long time, because we're having quite big installations, quite big products, customers on Kamunda 7, which I'm pretty sure they will still run that in probably 10 or maybe even 20 years from now. For some of those customers, we even have agreements, like contractual agreements, for a longer period of support, which is an option if that's super important for you. It's pretty comparable to other technology. I mean, you also, operating systems are changing, Java versions are changing, database versions are changing, and of course at some point in time all of these run out of support. It's kind of unavoidable, and no vendor can support like all versions from the past for all time, and that's in a way natural for IT, right? We try to extend the corridor, the time span you have for migration, as long as that makes sense from our perspective. And at the moment, I think we're having a pretty good compromise there.
Makes total sense. It's a long runway. It's just the way that the world goes, that versions run off the back end.
What I expect, honestly, is that over the next 5 years, that the world of software development is changing a lot. We see that everywhere. Cloud is coming, SaaS is coming. You shift more and more workloads to the public cloud vendors. You might embrace different architectures like microservices or whatever. And all of that has influence how software development is done, how our solutions are deployed, how the world is ticking. And what I definitely expect is that over time, all of our also existing Kamunda 7 customers will experience those kind of changes independently of Kamunda. And then there will be, let's say, opportunities to adjust the architecture. And that might be the point where you say, okay, and now I migrate from Kamunda 7 to Kamunda 8, because now I also have a big advantage, because I can, whatever, run that as a cloud service. I can run that in my cloud native environment. I will have all these kind of new features and stuff we build on top of the Kamunda 8 platform now, which then probably makes sense immediately for you. So there's also an upside, an opportunity for everybody involved here. You should not only see that as, oh, I have to migrate. If you compare it to, for example, operating systems, I'm not sure if you want to go back to a Windows 7 or a Windows whatever 95, just because it did its job. You see that there is so much more going on what you can do with an operating system, and it's not a good idea to lag behind too long, from my perspective.
Yeah, I get it. So there's like external kind of opportunities and pressures in the technology space that are going to make Kamunda 8 just make more and more sense as time goes by. And this is kind of the repositioning of the whole thing into this cloud native space.
Yeah, that's a good summary of that.
Okay, so what about what's actually involved in doing a migration? Do you want to dive into that, or is there more bigger context that you want to give before we jump into those kind of details?
No, I think these kind of details are actually interesting to explore, because for me, that's also part of the when should I migrate is very much connected, or can I migrate, to the effort of migration. And that's connected to what exactly do I have to do to migrate. So we can briefly go over it on a high level. So In a way, you have to migrate your models, like BPMN models or DMN models. You have to migrate code that might use the API. And you have data, basically, which might live like runtime process instances or probably also history data. So these are the three, let's say, big parts you have to look at. So if you go over them one by one, the models are relatively easy. So we're still using BPMN, we're still using DMN. There are a couple of different extensions. The experience we have so far with customers that are looking into migration is that it's not too hard to migrate most of the models. There, we have a plugin, for example, a modeler plugin that can do that conversion for you for the cases where we support it. We're currently looking into making that available as kind of a static web page where you can go and upload your BPMN file, and you get back basically the migrated one, which also would help you very early on in seeing what is probably not supported in Kumonade at the moment or where you need to look at. So the models are, I think, not the big problem. Part of the models, and that might be more interesting to some of the users, part of the model are the expression languages. So for example, if you have a gateway, which is a point in the model where you go either this or that way, then you have an expression describing the logic when you go this or that way. And in Kumonade 7, that was Joule, Java Unified Expression Language. And in Kumonade 8, we use Feel, the friendly enough expression language, which you might know from DMN. We use that all over the place now. So that was already in DMN. In Kumonade 7, now that's the default expression language everywhere. And that means you have to adjust your expressions. And that can be very easy. So if we have simple expressions, you can just convert them to Feel. That's even also automatable. Again, we have a modular plugin which does that for easy cases. But at the same time, it can be also impossible because there are, with Joule, you can always dive into Java. So for example, if you're in a Spring environment, you could define a Spring Bean with a method where you code arbitrary complex logic and you can invoke that in a Joule expression. And that's not possible in Feel. And that's by intention, because Feel expressions should but just be expressions. They should not invoke code. And if you have these kind of situations, you have to look into that very specifically. So these are the models. From my perspective, really the easy part. Then you have the application code. Application code is a different API. So we're using a different API for Kumonade 8 than for Kumonade 7. There is an adapter project out there as a community extension where you might simply reuse the existing code and that gets adapted to Kumonade 8. It works for, again, for the typical cases, but at the same time, I'm not sure if that's the best approach for the projects out there. I'm still in an observation mode in a way. I'm looking at the projects we're seeing and looking at them if they really want to use that adapter and how much value that adds. Because for a lot of projects, if you simply adjust the API and let's speak Java terms, you change the library, like the MIM dependency, and then you get a lot of like probably red code markers where the APIs change, then you simply go through them like what we said earlier in early days on a rainy Saturday afternoon. It shouldn't take too long. It's a very mechanic thing. It's not super complex. And afterwards, you have adjusted your application to the new API and you don't need any weird adapter logic anymore. My gut feeling at the moment is that this is the easier path for most projects, but I might be wrong. Maybe an adapter library is the solution. So as I said, I'm in observation mode. This gives you, by the way, also an opportunity to recheck, to reassess your architecture. So if these kind of code changes are spread all across your application, that might be a smell that this was not designed, I don't want to say properly, but this was probably not the best design, let's say it that way. And that might give you an opportunity to rethink some of that stuff at the same time. I know that this might increase the effort and you might not want to do that as part of the migration, but it's a good opportunity to do that in a way.
Yeah, I notice because I came into Kumonade really and using it with ZB Kumonade 8, and there's a real clear separation of concerns between business logic, you know, application code and the engine. Whereas in Kumonade 7, it seems as though a lot of it can be, I don't know if you'd say tightly coupled. It's running inside the engine. You can directly access the internal state of the engine, it seems. Like there's some pretty crazy things that people can do with it. And I don't know how well that translates to the new platform.
No, 100%. I think that's one of the big advantages of Kumonade, that isolation you just mentioned. And exactly what you said, in the end, this allowed people in Kumonade 7 to do, I always call that dirty hacks. So they could do whatever they want, basically. They can cast to engine implementation classes. They can influence a transaction manager. They can do basically everything there. And this typically also leads to problems. That's one thing. But now for these kind of hacks, they are a challenge for migration because they are not possible anymore, right? So this might influence your architecture. But how big of a problem that is, really depends on how you designed your application.
Okay, so it's also a good opportunity to revisit the architecture, maybe, you know, question your choices in life. Good hard look at yourself.
That's always a good habit. I would say that. And I mean, again, looking back, we're still supporting Commodore 7 for a long time. So if you have one project where you say, okay, we did all that dirty hacks and we're aware that was not a good idea, but it's not easily possible to migrate that at the moment, then keep running it with Commodore 7. That's also fine in a way, right? So if it's too hard to migrate, it's also understandable. So far, the most projects I've seen, these hacks are limited to, let's say, smaller parts in the architecture, which are normally possible to redesign and then also a good idea to redesign. So far, that's not such a big problem as I've seen it, but I haven't seen not all of the Commodore 7 solutions. So.
And while we're on APIs, one thing I've noticed for users coming from Commodore 7 to Commodore 8, they're like, why so many APIs? There's like a gRPC API, there's REST, there's a couple of REST ones, there's GraphQL, like what's going on?
It's, you know, I understandable from a user perspective. From an architecture perspective, we basically separated the different concerns we have. So we have the core engine, there you have an API to talk to it, like start a process instance or register workers for service tasks and so on and so forth. And there we pick gRPC basically for efficiency reasons. And for other stuff, like, for example, task, for the task list, like the human task API, we pick GraphQL because querying is kind of the core requirement there. And that means that you end up with a couple of different API for the different concerns. I totally understand that this is confusing. We're still discussing internally how we can probably improve the developer experience around that. So not saying this is coming, I'm just saying we're discussing that. But one idea also is that maybe a Java client could then embed the different APIs. So as a Java developer, if I use my SDK, I don't even recognize that I use different API technologies underneath. That could be one example to kind of hide that from the developers. But we're discussing that. We're keeping a close eye on users and community at the moment on that.
Yeah, that's really how it is with the gRPC API, at least. It's like, unless you get an error because you had the wrong version of a gRPC dependency, you don't even know it's happening. You're just calling high-level API methods and things happen under the hood.
Yeah.
Maybe you have to configure a firewall or something. That's about it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It might be more complicated to configure if you have different endpoints, but at the same time, that's kind of the reality. You want to... Different systems serve different purposes. And specifically, as we are looking at big installation, big customers very often, that's an issue also in Commodore 7 at the moment that, for example, if you take task management, then you can make complex queries like, hey, I want to see all tasks for this group and this whatever contract or just unassigned. And if this boils down to SQL queries on the database, that's sometimes pretty hard to process for the database. And at the same time, that might even influence runtime performance negatively. So there are all these kind of connections internally. And now we are separated that. So we are having the runtime cannot be influenced by queries at all. We're pushing all the data to Elasticsearch, which is much more optimized for making complex queries and like even custom queries. So overall, I think that cleans up a lot of the problems we have. It, of course, adds a bit of complexity because we now have different components. To some extent, my assumption for the, let's say, the later future, at least, is that you will not really recognize that because, first of all, the runtime is SaaS, so it's operated by us, so you don't care how many components we operate. And at the same time, the APIs might be hidden behind a simple SDK. And then as a developer, you don't care that much. And then you have a system which is where the complexity is hidden from the user. And at the same time, it's super powerful because it can do all these kind of complex queries, runtime, throughput, low latency at scale, and all these kind of things. And yeah, that's kind of what I find so fascinating about Commodore.
Okay, it sounds great when the battle station is fully operational. At the moment, it's kind of like the Death Star with the scaffolding still a little bit visible. put that SDK skin over the top of it and you won't recognize it. Mm-hmm. So speaking of the different components, you know, you've touched on modeling, the expression language, which has changed from Joule to Feel, the application code, the APIs, and there's a few other kind of components involved that people probably have to touch to do migrations, right? Like you touched on tasks, there's also forms.
Yeah, there UI parts, for example, might be interesting. Yeah, that if you build your UI yourself, it's again just the API changed. At the same time, forms, like if you use, for example, Camunda forms, they are supported in Camunda 7 and 8. So that's the good part. If you use any of the other form techniques we had in Camunda 7, they are not supported in Camunda 8. So you have to probably look at that. Again, gut feeling wise, there are not that many customers doing that. But if that's an issue, what I always recommend is reach out and discuss the use case with us, because these kind of just discussing it theoretically for all possible use cases kind of in a way weird. So if you have a concrete use case, discuss that with us or ask in the forum. That's always a good opportunity. But probably the last and also very interesting part is data. So if you're having a Camunda 7 system in production, you have data in your database and how to migrate that. And at the moment there's a twofold answer to that. So the first is the runtime data. So for the runtime data, we don't have a migration script or something like that. You cannot just simply push a button and now it's from Camunda 7 to Camunda 8, because that's connected to that. You also have to change other things. So we cannot simply migrate that over. But we're basically having a procedure which is very similar to when we migrate data from a third party workflow system, like whatever, an Oracle or an IBM or what have you, Pega. Then we have a procedure how to start new process instances in the right state. And then it means you read the data from Camunda 7 database and start new process instances in the right state in Camunda 8. And as time goes by, so we're currently looking into that with customers and partners. So my guess is that I don't know the exact time frame. I would say probably half a year or maybe at least a year. Then you will have kind of examples and success stories of, hey, this is how we migrated our data. Probably even here's the script we used and these kind of things. So that's the runtime data and the history data. At the moment, this is not migratable. So you cannot migrate the history data from Camunda 7 easily to Camunda 8, but I don't think that it's that big of a problem. Why? Because there's one component which is stable from Camunda 7 to Camunda 8, which is called Camunda Optimize. And Camunda Optimize is kind of our, let's say, BI tool for understanding what happened in our process instances in the past and making analyses on that. And if you export your data from Camunda 7 into Optimize, it will stay there. And then you can push the data from Camunda 8 in the same Optimize instance. And that makes it kind of, okay, there's the long-term storage. I can leverage that for business analysis. And I lose kind of the history in the local Camunda 7 engine, but that's normally then only used for operations, like is everything going well or not, which is not necessary anymore if you shut down the Camunda 7 instance. So that's kind of how I'm thinking about that at the moment. But again, we're learning every day. So I can just motivate everybody. If you have a use case, if you don't agree with what I'm saying, I reach out and discuss that with us.
Yeah, okay. I got it. So there's like migrating and then a clean break. Hey, it's a new system, you know, next version, whatever. And then there's kind of this platform itself is a quantum leap, radical innovation, rebuild. But from the data perspective, from the business perspective, you want business continuity. You want continuity of your business data. You want long-running processes to be able to be shifted from one system to the other system and continue running. And it sounds like that is either possible or soon to be possible. But the looking historically at the view of your business and what's been happening in it, that's basically going to be a break with the past there. So you'll be looking at your new system and your old system in two different interfaces?
I would say yes for the operational part, so the daily runtime, but not for the business analysis part. So if you look at optimize, Kimundo optimize, you will probably have all the data from both systems overall, but the what's going on a day-to-day basis is pretty different. And of course, there are always nuts and bolts which might need to be figured out currently. Yeah. And that's probably also interesting for everybody who is looking into migration projects. So we are having actually a couple of partners from us looking into that more deeply on a project level. And really, my expectations is that we will have a lot of learnings over the next year, which might lead to also, let's say, more established practices. So at the moment, there are a lot of ideas, there are attempts, but obviously no, or at least no customer I know of is already completely through, okay, we migrated this big in-production system from Kimundo 7 to Kimundo 8.
I'm surprised to hear that you can look at a Kimundo 7 and Kimundo 8 system history in the same interface, because it's radically different data stores.
It's the Optimize has the same data store. So Kimundo Optimize is one component which was already in the Kimundo 7 architecture, kind of decoupled from the rest. So basically Kimundo 7, the engine pushed or not even, no, I think it was even Optimize pulling data from a Kimundo 7 engine and then storing that in a different internal format for Optimize. We already did that with Kimundo 7, and Optimize will basically stays the same. So with Kimundo 8, it means that Kimundo 8 is pushing all the data out to an Elastic store, and then we have a loading mechanism to get it into Optimize. And then the data is there in the same format, independent if you're coming from Kimundo 7 or Kimundo 8 in Optimize.
Whoever did that architecture for Optimize needs to get a medal, because they clearly nailed the abstraction.
Yeah.
Yeah, well done. Okay, so that's kind of covers, like, you got a running system in C7. When do we lift it and shift it to C8? What about if you're looking to start a new project and maybe you have like tons of C7 experience in-house, you know, and tooling and everything, and you're like, should we do it on C7 or C8 at this point? What are your thoughts on that?
It's the part of what you said in the beginning is probably the most complicated. If you have a lot of knowledge, a lot of best practices internally, and we have customers running big center of excellence, running tens or hundreds of projects, and switching the modus operandi is not super simple for them. And I totally understand that. At the same time, I would try to get to a situation where you can start new projects with Kimundo 8 as soon as possible, because starting a new project with Kimundo 7 is kind of weird, because that already means you have migration in the back of your head when you start doing it. And I would try to avoid that. And the whole discussion around feature parity, we're missing this or that feature, normally is not that big of a showstopper for new projects, because they are rarely going live tomorrow. So first of all, there's a bit of runway to build a couple of features, and we have a roadmap where we relatively good know when we build what. But of course it can happen, but very often then it's also not a big problem to live without this or that feature, because you're building it from scratch and then you're having this workaround in, and that's probably okay. We did that also with Kimundo 7 in the early years for years, and that worked pretty well. So I tend to recommend to start with Kimundo 8 then now, because then you avoid any kind of migration in the future. You avoid any kind of confusion around, okay, what should we do now? Is there anything we should definitely avoid to be migratable and so on and so forth?
Okay, so you're strongly advocating, if it's at all possible, go to Kimundo 8 now with any new projects, greenfield stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, I totally understand the part where you're already invested in best practices and probably in code and frameworks internally. Still, if I do a new project, I would like introducing Kimundo probably in the first time, I would do at least a pilot project, a proof of concept, a lighthouse project, whatever, some of those projects with Kimundo 8 to learn and understand what that means and how probably best practices need to adapt, and then adapt that slowly. I would also not like pull the trigger saying, okay, now everybody does Kimundo 8. We have no idea yet what that means, but we do that from now on. That also doesn't make sense, obviously. So you have to do that again, step by step. And that's probably harder for big organizations than it's for small. If you have like one or two Kimundo projects and all of those are done by the same developers, it's relatively easy to switch. If you have like hundreds of developers running or doing Kimundo projects, it's definitely a different story, of course.
I got it. So let's say that I'm listening to the podcast and I'm like, I don't believe I'm listening to this and hearing what he's saying, because we literally just started this new project like 2 weeks ago on Kimundo 7. And there's no way I'm going to be able to get management to realign on switching this to C8 now. Now what am I going to do? So do you have any advice for someone who finds themselves in that situation?
Yeah, we do. I mean, there is a migration guide in the docs, which I can totally recommend to have a look at. So if you just go to the Kimundo docs, docs.kimundo.io, there in the guide section, there is a guide migrating from Kimundo Platform 7, which also, by the way, walks you through all the concrete steps, what you have to do, and the adapter logic I mentioned earlier on is linked here, and so on and so forth. And that also has one section about, it's called preparing for smooth migrations. And that means basically, okay, if I do Kimundo 7 projects, or if I probably touch a Kimundo 7 project, I need to touch it, but I can't migrate it right now. It might be worth to look at those practices to make it easier to migrate later on. And in a way, that's pretty much obvious and related to what I said in the beginning. What are the differences? So for example, no hacks, no dirty hacks. So we call that clean delegates. So if you write a bit of code, don't assume you're running the same JVM as the engine. Don't assume you can have a transactional integration there. Don't assume you can cast to any engine classes. So there are a couple of these things which are also linked here. So clean delegates, I think, is really the most important thing, because if you do that right, then you can use that adapter and reuse the code kind of in a minute easily. Then other things, like what I said early on, don't spread the API, the Kimundo API usage, all across the application. So don't expose it to the outside world. So I've seen customers exposing the REST APIs to their UIs, making that harder to switch in a way, right? So sometimes then it makes sense to keep that more local. Depends a bit on what you do, what that means exactly. But yeah, the more local the usage is, the easier it is to switch it later on. Then more concrete hands-on things, like use primitive variables or JSON. JSON is something we also support in Kimundo 8. Primitives, of course, also, because primitives are part of JSON. So that will be easy to migrate. We don't support XML out of the box. We don't support any Java types. That was possible in Kimundo 7. You could just throw in a Java object and it was serialized in the database. We don't support that anymore. So that can get a bit of a hassle if you have especially Java objects or probably XML there. So it should be primitives and JSON. Same goes for the expression language, which was kind of connected. So you're using feel instead of jewel. There is a community project how to hook in the feel expression language into a Kimundo 7 engine. So that might be worth a look, because then you could already write feel expressions from day one with Kimundo 7. If that's not possible for whatever reason or too complicated, it's not too much of a problem if you write simple expressions only. So if you have simple jewel expressions, they will be automatically transformable. If it's just saying, hey, X is greater or equals 5, that's super easy to transform. Again, don't go into Spring Beans or Java codes and so on and so forth. So keep them simple. That helps a lot. Yeah, and use Kimundo forms. So you asked that earlier on, right, about the UI. So Kimundo forms are there in Kimundo 7 and 8. So that's a good way of keeping them migratable. All the other formats of Kimundo 7 are not supported in Kimundo 8. And I think these were the kind of the main things you should have a look at. And then despite that, just probably have Kimundo 8 back of your mind, probably look at the architecture or build a small example, the get started guide quickly. And then you should have an idea how Kimundo 8 is behaving. And then you can build the better migratable Kimundo 7 solution, I think.
You think that building with Kimundo 8 in mind would lead to better, more maintainable C7 systems?
I would think yes, yeah, because there are a lot of the things I talk about make it simpler and more isolated, like clean delegates. That's something you should have done forever in Camunda 7 already, right? So clean delegates is something you should always do. And that's, by the way, that's a discussion that comes up regularly. Why do you have to do this kind of different components? Or why do you have to do microservices? You could do a well-structured monolith, but no, you can't very often, because if you can cast to an implementation class, if you can do this workaround just for that tiny case, people do it. So I definitely would say that if you follow these rules, you will get a better design Camunda 7 architecture as well. Yeah.
You get a system like Optimize where you can just like whack it on top of a completely different system and not even notice, right? It's like the right level of abstraction and isolation.
Honestly, it was also a learning process for us internally. I remember, and that was more like 10 or 12 years back, we had for example, you could throw in a Java object into Camunda 7, and we had a mechanism which could recognize, oh, that's a JPA, that's the Java Persistence API, JPA entity. So we managed that with the right JPA persistence manager, so it ends up in their database and just remember the primary key for it. And then we do that transparently in the background. That's super cool, because if you're a Java developer, you can throw in your entity and will be persisted correctly, will be retrieved correctly, and so on and so forth. So we experimented with that. And I was kind of a fan in the beginning. So we had a lot of these kind of tricks with JPA or CDI, all the Java enterprise stuff. But in the long run, it turned out that was simply not a good idea, because it like couples everything together too tightly. And that was also for us a learning process in a way.
Too much magic, eh? And unmaintainable.
From my perspective, to summarize, I find it important that people are not worried. So we don't leave anybody alone with Camunda 7. So it's here for quite a long time. We're still actively developing it. We're looking into migration projects, learning along the way. And I'm pretty sure we will also improve our migration practices over time. So we're not letting people alone with that. That's for me very important, because I mean all the Camunda 7 users are of course close to my heart. They brought us where we are, and I'm pretty sure there is a good way of migration for almost any of those.
Thanks for coming on the podcast, Bernd, and sharing about the Camunda 7 to 8 migration, connecting the past with an exciting future in the cloud.
Thanks so much for having me, Josh, and keep up the exciting podcast.
Audio engineering provided by Inclusion Audio Production. Check them out at inclusionaudio.com. And the soundtrack is provided by the legendary Japanese progressive house DJ Shingo Nakamura, courtesy of monstercat.com.